Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, it never fails. He's a thorn in my side. He is the albatross on my shoulder. He is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
Oh, I love that. The pain in your ass. You should have thrown there as well.
Put your face against the microphone, you loser. What is this, your first podcast?
It is on the microphone. Well, now are you yelling at me?
You sounded like you were 40 feet away from your microphone for a second there.
I'm almost gagging on it. That's how in my face it is.
Is the right microphone selected? Check that right microphone while I introduce our guest. With us this week is Mark Venturelli, the creator of Relic Hunters, and that's multiple Relic Hunter video games, dual stick shooters about blasting evil space ducks and turtles with tiny, cute guns. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Very, very excited to have you here. We played a couple of your games over at PAX East. I know Andy was quite smitten. I recorded that interview, so I didn't get my grubby mitts on the game, but I'm looking forward to hearing your story, hearing all about Relic Hunters. But listener, if you're just stumbling upon this here channel, let me tell you a little story about what we do here. This is the Dual Screens Podcast. This is an interview show where we bring on our industry guests to tell us their story and to discuss their latest project. Everyone in the gaming industry, be it a programmer, an artist, a voice actor, it doesn't matter, background artist, it could be anybody. They have a story to tell, and this is their platform to do so. Remember, folks, this show posts each and every Thursday on your podcast service of choice, including Podbean, iHeartRadio, Spotify, everything. You name it, it's on there. iTunes, all of it. It's everywhere. So thank you very much for joining us. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing pretty good. Just had dinner.
Hanging in nice. There with this crazy world we live in right now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, both me and my wife, we are remote workers, always have been. So we're like, our lifestyle was already quarantined, so it didn't change much. Didn't change a lot.
I'm going to be honest, it was a little nerve-wracking coming home from PAX East and then all of this kind of just hitting the fan very quickly. Were there any what was post PAX East for you? How was that? What was that like?
So, honestly, during PAX East, I was a bit terrified already. I was like just cleaning my hands compulsively. Yeah. And when I came back on the plane, I was like a crazy person. I was fully like masked and cloaked and not even looking at other people. But but just coming back and seeing everything, especially in the USA, just hearing like how New York and stuff, like it's just crazy the contrast between when I travel there for PAX and now it's just insane. And here in Brazil, it's kind of crazy, honestly. I'm really scared about we maybe becoming another USA. We could be doing a much, much better job, I guess, at containing this thing. So it is a bit scary.
Yeah. I mean, we just got to do our part, you know, take care of each other, make sure that we're not doing anything stupid. But the one thing we all did that was really stupid.
Podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. Record podcasts. Everyone's got a podcast now. The podcast world has doubled since this whole thing started. One of the dumbest things I think we all did was go to PAX, but I got to be honest, I have zero regrets. And I'm sure you too, like the lines out there were just a blast. How was your PAX East?
Was amazing. It's always like PAX is my favorite show. We don't do that many shows because being from Brazil, it's crazy expensive to attend one of these shows. The only reason why we even can do that is that we have support from the Brazilian government. There's an agency called APEX. They brought us to PAX. They bring us to GDC, other cool events like that. PAX is always so fun. I mean, for us, it was really, really good events in terms of like pretty much everything. It was so good for us. Like everything that we wanted to achieve at PAX East, we did, and it was awesome.
Can you give some examples of what you wanted to achieve that you did?
Yeah, sure. So we wanted to get like a certain number of wish lists on our Steam page. We got almost double that.
Wow.
We wanted to get some press coverage. We got it. We got some like tier A coverage like GameSpot. It was super cool. We wanted to get a publisher for the game and we got it.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. We can announce it. It's going to be announced probably next year. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be super cool. We've been talking to our community since we came back from PAX to figure out, hey, so we might sign with this publisher. How do you feel about that? So far, they seem to be cool. They don't know which publisher it is. I just said it's not EA, so to calm them down. yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. And but for us, it was totally worth it. But apart from that, just being at PAX for us, it's always so like energizing because the atmosphere and the vibe at PAX for us is unlike any other event that we ever went to. Like people are so... Like sometimes we forget because internet is such a mean place. Sometimes we forget how awesome games are, right? And how awesome gamers are because we just get exposed to those like nasty trolls and horrible people on Twitter and whatnot. And when you get to see like actual video game community and actual gamers, just passionate people. They're just people who love video games and love everything about them. And it's intoxicating for us. It's really like every time that we come back from bags, we come back like pumped to just make the game bigger, better, and crazier.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. But just all the games we play at PAX is so overwhelming. But we're still glad we saw your game though, Mark, because that game was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And also incredibly hard, because I was not so good at it.
That was probably Relic Country Zero. Yeah, Relic Country Zero gets pretty brutal. Yeah.
If I remember correctly, both of you lost. I believe Mark lost before you, Andy. So what does that say?
Oh, God. That's not good at all for anyone involved.
Well, you got to get good. What can I tell you? It was all caught on camera.
It was indeed.
So what's the plan when you get back from a PAX East? Is it like, obviously you had a lot of these dominoes kind of just fall into place. It's great. You got yourself a publisher. I imagine now that there's a whole new list of things you have to do for that publisher. Can you talk, without mentioning who the publisher is, what are those things that you now have to do that's different from your normal path of publication?
Yeah. So we were, 2020 was going to be, kind of still is, but was going to be like a super challenging year for us. So when January came, like we came back from holidays and stuff, I sat down with everybody on the team and we had like an all hands meeting to say, hey, everyone, like this is the year for us. This is when everything that we work for is either going to pan out or we're going to be screwed. Mm-hmm. And everything's gonna go to shit. Can I swear? Sorry.
Absolutely.
We encourage it.
I swear a lot. Yeah. So everything is gonna go to shit, or we're gonna hit it big this year. And we were looking for somebody to come in and invest money into the game and help us make it as big as we wanted to be. But we were also on the same time preparing ourselves for like worst case scenario. We don't get anybody. We do this ourselves. We're going to put the game out on early access, like as soon as possible with the, like an MVP version of the game. Right. And just try to get like slowly one step at a time, as we have always been. It's been a struggle. Like every year, making Relic Country's Legend has been like David versus Goliath kind of thing. You know, like we're trying to do this massive online game. It's like indie Destiny or indie Borderlands. It's a difficult game to make with a small team.
Jeez.
And every year we kind of have to outdo ourselves in terms of how we're going to get the resources that we need to get through this year, right? So for this year, we knew that it was like a make or break kind of thing. And it looks like we made it. So it's really, really fortunate. So everything changed after we came back from PAX, for sure. I mean, the most important thing is that we're now looking at a longer-term plan for the things that we're doing. So before, we were almost in panic mode trying to get, okay, what are the things that we absolutely need to get done or fixed before senior early access hits, right? And now we have extra time. So we get the rare luxury the game developers not always have to just sit down a little bit and say, okay, let's think this through. Let's plan this out a little bit more carefully. Let's see if there's something that we can do to make our lives easier going forward instead of just like soldiering on, you know, building better tools and stuff like that, changing something that we were not happy with. So this is a rare, the rare opportunity that we have to do that. And also growing the team. Like we have been growing like exponentially. It's been kind of crazy. Relic Hunters was early on was just me and Batu, the artist. So Relic Hunters Zero, I coded the entire game. I'm not even a programmer.
But jeez, what the hell?
Now you are.
The game works, right? And Batu was the artist. And then from Legends, we started with just me. And then two people, and then like four people. During the Kickstarter, we were seven in late 2017. And then in 2018, we got a deal with a Chinese partner to distribute the game in China. And that got us a little advance money, which was pretty useful, kind of save us that year as well. So we got up to our current size, which is 17 people. And now this year, we're probably going to go to like 30, which is very scary. It's going to be like the biggest team that I ever led. And of course, for the game of this size, this is pretty much standard. You don't actually do a game like this with less than like 30, 50 people unless you're kind of crazy.
Well, you know what? Why don't you tell us what a game like this is? Let's take a couple of steps back because I want you to pitch what these games are. So
sure.
Relic Hunters Zero Remix is the twin stick shooter that you and Andy were playing together. But Relic Hunters Legend is completely different.
Yes.
So tell us about Zero Remix first, and then we'll get into Legend.
Cool. So Zero Remix is the remix or remastered version of Relic Hunters Zero. So Relic Hunters Zero was a game that I coded by myself in 2015 with Batu. Pretty much just the two of us. At the time, we were making a game called Chroma Squad.
Oh, God, I love Chroma Squad.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So we were working on Chroma Squad. The game was taking quite a bit longer than we anticipated. We're getting a bit tired. And we wanted to like do a game jam on the weekend just to like let the creative juices flow a little bit and get our heads out of Chroma Squad a little bit.
Sure.
We made this little game called Space Jimmy, which was pretty much Relic Hunters Zero. But I got sick on the middle of the game jam.
Oh, no.
And I was the programmer. So, the lights out, guys. There's no programmer. The game cannot go on. So we didn't finish it. And it was the first time ever that I didn't finish a game jam. So I was pretty bummed about that. And also the game was a lot of fun to work on. So the next weekend I was feeling better and I told Beto, hey, do you want to finish that game? Even though the game jam is over, he said, yeah, sure. Let's do it. And we work on the game, just me and him on the weekend. And then the next weekend came on and we were all at the time, we were all living in the same house. We had a house here in Brasilia, the capital of Brazil. It was more like a freaking mansion because it was 15 people living there. It was Indie House Brasilia.
It's like a TV show house. It's like a reality
show.
Yeah,
it was pretty crazy. Yeah, it was completely crazy. Instead of
you said something, and I don't mean to cut you off, but you said before you're not a programmer, yet
yes.
You went to game jams as the only programmer?
It's what you do at game jams, man.
That seems like the highest pressure yourself. Situation to be a programmer who has no experience.
Yes.
That's like, hey,
it wasn't my first game jam as a programmer, but yeah, I usually game jams we try to challenge ourselves and do something that is out of our comfort zones. So yeah,
that blows my mind as somebody who is currently dipping his toes in the gaming industry and being given things that I've never really done before and kind of running with it. It's absolutely terrifying to kind of do that with no, especially with the time constraint that you have in a game jam. That's insane.
I would highly encourage you to try it because, in fact, when we talk to students and people who are starting out in the industry, we encourage people to do game jams a lot because exactly it's, you shouldn't feel pressure at all because it is an environment where you're totally okay to make mistakes, right? So, and it's also like such a short. Yeah, I mean, you can do whatever you want. I mean, the first game gen that I was programming, I couldn't program at all. I got better over the years, but at my first game gen, I couldn't program at all. So I got, there was like, what was it called? It wasn't Playmaker, it was something else. So it was like a visual programming tool for like making visual novels. Mm. So I just used that, you know? So that was something that I could wrap my head around and just make a game with, right? So I feel like game gens are like this. You do what's within your reach.
Right.
And it's a really good environment for you to get actual game development experience in, because you can fail. You can totally fail, and it's okay. The game can be shit. And probably like 20 first games that we make as game developers are shit. I know mine were. So you need to get those shit games done as fast as possible so you can move on to make games that are not shit. So as fast as you can get those 20 games done, you're on your way to making something good.
I find it funny how a lot of developers say a lot of their games often are born out of a game jam that they've attended before.
I think game jams are so interesting because, especially for Relic Hunter Zero, it was so special for us because it was something that when you make a game on a game jam, it's completely authentic, you know? Not that our games are not from game jams, are not authentic, but it's kind of different because when you're a professional game developer, you're not only thinking about what you really want to do, you're also thinking about what you're good at, and you're also thinking about what you can sell, right? Because you have to make a living off of it. So you look for like the Venn diagram of these like free circles, right? Trying to find something that ticks all these boxes at the same time. And when I make a game gen, especially when I look into Zero, it was just, I want to have fun. I want to do something that it's for me. It's not for anybody else, right? And the fact that we made a game like this in Relic Hunter Zero was absolutely like, it was a game just for me and Batu, pretty much. And it resonated so hard with people. Like, we released Relic Hunter Zero for free a few months after Chroma Squad. We just made the game freeware, open source. We didn't want to charge people money for it. We were still working on like Chroma Squad DLC imports and stuff like that. So we didn't want to like support. We didn't plan to support Relic Hunter Zero, right? So we just released it for free. It got like, I remember I told Beto, hey, like, this is really fun. We love working on this. Like, let's release it for free. If it gets like 100,000 downloads, that means that people really like this. And we can like make a follow-up game, right? And work on that after Chroma Squad. The game got 1.5 million downloads.
Wow. Oh my God.
It was just an insane amount of people playing the game. Like we had forums back there. They were flooded with people. People were doing fan arts. People were doing like they're into the characters. They wanted to know more about the universe, which didn't exist. It was just completely crazy. And I just looked at Bat and said, man, we have to follow this up. Like, we have to make a game, like turn this into the IP that we always wanted to make, right? Something that was totally born from just our love of video games, right? It was completely not like we're trying to figure out, are people going to like this or not? It's just something that we made because we thought it was fun and it was good for us. And we had fun working on it. And turns out that people really like that. And so that was so validating. And maybe that's the reason why a lot of great games end up coming from game gens. Because when a game gen game really works, I think it's the most validating feeling that you get like as an artist, you know? Like feeling like your point of view is something that resonates with people, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't think on a small scale for a game jam. I think I would be like the guy that's like this huge, massive project, and you have no time. Be a couple of stick figures in a paper. The time I were done.
Yeah, that's a skill. That's something that you practice and you get better at for sure.
This podcast is a game jam every week.
You should have charged $1 for that game. He would have had $1.5 million.
Don't mention it. I think about this every day. Don't mention it.
Well, how much of it being free was, do you think, was why it was downloaded that many times?
So my imposter syndrome would tell you that 100%. But over the years, honestly, the game was such a huge success as a free game. And I admit that was kind of a weird feeling, because the imposter in me was feeling like, okay, so people don't really like this game. It's just because it's free. But then I think I got over that after like a year or two, when I started to realize that a lot of games were releasing for free on Steam. And at the same time and after, and even these days, and they're not getting like half the attention the Relic Hunters was getting and like half as good reviews. And people were really into it for real, right? Like they were doing fan arts. They were like engaging. Like we made a community. Like people were making mods. Like it was a really sincere kind of thing. But I don't know what would have happened if we had charged money for this game. It could have been the same, and I would be rich now. It could have been like nothing. It could have sold like 200 copies and died on Steam, like most games do. I don't know. I really don't know. Like, I like to think that people will like the game anyway. And that is something that I'm coming to terms with over the years.
Well, I think you got two really good things out of releasing this game for free. One is you have a very loyal and active and engaged fan base out of this, who's going to follow you for all your future projects and anything.
Yeah, they have. They have. There are people who started playing the game in 2015, and they're still on our community now, 5 years later. It's crazy.
And the other thing is we're getting this super awesome update package with Zero Remix.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool.
So let's get into that for a second.
Yeah, sure. So Aquapara Games, they're a really cool publisher, like a boutique small publisher from L.A. They've been close friends to us, personal friends. They're great, 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 great people. And we work with them on a little game called Star Vikings Forever. It was a really weird game. If you want to do another whole episode, I can tell you the story of that game. But let's leave it. Let's leave it for now. It's a very interesting game. But that's how I got to know these guys. And so one of the things that people in our community asked us the most for Relic Hunter Zero was always like, do a Switch version. And people were always asking us to do that. And for us, it's kind of tricky because being in Brazil, Nintendo doesn't really work with Latin America developers. So you need to get like a partner in like US or Europe or someplace like that for you to be able to work with Nintendo. So we shipped Chroma Squad on the Xbox and the PlayStation 4. But we had no dev kits and no experience and no opportunity to work on Nintendo Switch. And also it was a free game. So that also made like justifying it, even to Nintendo itself, kind of a difficult proposition. So Aquapara actually had the idea, like, let's release the game on the Switch. We can completely update the game, do new stuff, new assets, new features, new soundtrack. And then we can charge money for that because it's going to be like our work, right? And not you guys. And yeah, it made a lot of sense. Like for us, it was like we really like and really trust these guys. And I think they did an excellent job with Remix. And the game's going to be out on the Switch. And there's going to be something that I programmed on a Nintendo video game. And that's kind of crazy. If you went back in time and told like 10-year-old me that that's going to happen, he would like not believe you.
That's a very common sentiment with our guests on the show that have their game on coming out to the Switch or on the Switch.
It's crazy. It's insane.
So a few things there. First of all, I've seen some pretty horrific games on the eShop that are free or a dollar, and they don't even compare to the quality that your game is. I've seen games like, you know, fucking Blanket Simulator, or whatever, and they're on the eShop. So that's weird. And I want to touch on the whole Nintendo not working with Latin American developers. Is there a reason for that, you think, or why is that?
I don't know. That's a question for Nintendo, I guess. Not me. I'm just a developer from Brazil. I wish they did. I don't know. Probably legal reasons.
That's strange.
It's so bizarre. What's the legality there? Oh, those shady Brazilians, we can't do business with them.
I don't know. Like Brazil does have some pretty special laws. That's yeah. we had some complications for sure. Like some of our legislation is kind of weird and crazy. Sometimes countries have to do it. Like companies do exceptions for Brazil in some mm-hmm. stuff. Maybe that's what happens with Nintendo, but I don't know shit about law, so yeah.
Because yeah, I can see, like, if it's a cultural thing with Japan, but if Sony is embracing you guys and getting you
possibly,
out of it, yeah. Nintendo wouldn't.
Possibly. I honestly have no idea.
All right. We got to reach out, see what's going on there.
Ball sharpen your journalistic skills.
Yeah. We got to scoop it up.
All right, so let's pivot now to Relic Hunter's Legend. So yes. You said Destiny-like, an indie Destiny. Yeah.
Yes, indie. Give us Borderlands the pitch. Or indie Warframe. It's a shooter looter, but it's done from like a indie developer perspective, I guess. So it's still in the same vein of Relic Hunter Zero. It's still a top-down shooter. It's 3D though. There's also something that I think is really cool is that the game has full verticality. So the combat takes place like up and down, you climb up stuff, you jump off stuff. And that's really hard to do with twin stick. There's a lot of interesting tricks that we had to make to have that work as seamless as it does in Relic Hunter Legend. But it's also like the shooter looter influence is there for sure. Like we played a metric ton of Borderlands and Destiny and Warframe in our lives. If I sum all the hours that I have in these three games, it's going to be like a year of my life or more. So these are games that we really enjoy and wanted to make our take on it. But also we have other influences. So the game has a really strong JRPG influence, not only in the way that we do storytelling, and the overall style of it, especially Chrono Trigger, which is our favorite one. There's a lot of Chrono Trigger references in the story, especially it's a time travel story. But we also are very community driven since Relic Hunter Zero, so we want to make a game that brings people together. And in Brazil, we all grew up, people who are my age, we all grew up playing Ragnarok Online. It was a really popular game in Brazil in the early 2000s and late 90s. And that was a very social game. Like people would log into Ragnarok, just sit on the town and talk, right? And just hang out with like our online friends. And we're trying to bring a little more of that social aspect to the game as well. So we're trying to make a game, and I hope I'm not going on too much of a tangent here.
No, absolutely not.
We're trying to make a game that brings people together and connect them, right? The same way that we try to connect people in our community and make them like get to know each other and connect to each other. We're trying to do the same thing on the game design. And because there's a trend right now that really worries me as a designer, and I don't think it's intentional. I think it was just an indirect product of streamlining and iterating on online game design. But what happened was, if you guys play like Vanilla WoW, something like that, right? And now there's WoW Classic, so everybody can kind of get their experience again. It's a very social game. You know, you sit, if you want to do a dungeon, right? You sit in front of the dungeon. You can start spamming chat, like healer looking for more for dungeons, Scarlet, whatever. And then you're going to wait for somebody to like join your party and you're going to accept. And now it's a healer and a tank sitting in front of the dungeon, right? And a healer and tank looking for three more. And then you are in the meantime, you're talking, right? Usually goes like, hey, where are you from? And suddenly you're just making small talk as you wait for your party to fill up, as you sit in front of the dungeon. And when your party is filled up, like 20 minutes later, that was like, you're now a brotherhood, right?
Yeah, you're friends,
now like, yeah, let's go. We got like it. We took 20 minutes to assemble this and let's go on an adventure together, right? And then you feel like you failed the first encounter or something like that. You're not going to go, fuck you noobs, and quit, right? It took you 20 minutes together and you know these people, right? You know these
That's
people.
A long time in game minutes, by the way. A 20-minute sit-down session.
Oh, man. We used to queue for missions and dungeons in Final Fantasy XI and just sit there for hours. Hours, Andy, because we needed the right people. So what we would do, you would stand outside the entrance or wherever the hell it was, and you would go like maybe 30 or 40 feet and like pull some to like just farm to like XP grind while you're waiting for a party and just sit there for hours just doing this, just clicking the same four buttons over and over again while you're just chatting in the game chat. It was, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, but now I have a feeling what you're going to get to is that you can now just queue for a mission. It'll just pull four random people, throw you in the mission, and see what happens.
Exactly. Yeah. And for me, the bad part about this, because, hey, isn't it great that we're saving people's time? Yeah, sure. Time is a very valuable thing. But what we end up doing is that we made our online games into little machines that create social bets. Because if you think about it, When you queue for a dungeon now in WoW, right? You just say, I'm a tank, and you queue up. In like 10 seconds, you're into a dungeon already. First one of the dungeon, and you have like a healer, you have a DPS, you have your whole party there. And there's not even enough time to acknowledge those people as human beings. And you just start pulling the first group, right? And if you communicate, you don't even call people by their in-game name. You're going to call them by their class, right? Warrior, like, don't do this. Or mage, like, cheap this guy, right? And what's going to happen is that if people are good, you're gonna want to stick around. If people are not playing well, you're going to kick them. You're going to try to make them leave, or you're going to leave yourself, right? So what's happening there is that the game design is making you dehumanize people. It's making you think of people as either tools for you to achieve what you want or obstacles in front of your goals, right? And that's a pretty like insane kind of thing if you think about it. And if you think about the effect this kind of stuff has on like kids as they're playing, like, because I grew up with online games, but they are very different online games, right? For example, I learned to speak English because of online games. Like I had a Guild Wars guild, and I would just chat with them all the time. And that's how I now speak fluent English, and I'm able to sit here with you.
The cursing makes much more sense now, by the way.
Sorry?
The cursing makes much more sense.
Yeah. There you go. So and just opened so many doors for me. And I think about, like, I want to have kids with my wife very soon. Like, if my kid was playing these kind of games, and I would have to kind of sit down with him and talk about stuff like that, you know? Like, and not every parent is going to do that, right? Because people are busy. People are not always understanding their son's, their children's pastimes. And it's just a bad thing. And that's not only games, of course. This took over the entire online culture as a whole. Making like dehumanizing people as a whole. So this is something that worries us actively. So this is something that we're trying to worry about. And I know that a lot of really smart designers, much smarter than me, in other companies, are thinking the same thing. This is not me, something that I came up with, or a problem that I'm trying to solve by myself. I'm just trying to do my part. And it's something that we really try to think, hey, how can we design this in a way that really makes people connect with each other, right? We still need to respect people's time, because these days, like, the expectations, if I design a game that you have to wait 20 minutes to make a party, nobody's going to play it. So you have to live with that. But that's design. That's the beauty of design. The constraints are changing. You need to find solutions, right? So what can we do that still saves people time, but we still try and like not perpetuate that cycle of people seeing other people as just tools or obstacles, right?
Yeah, it sounds like a rough thing to solve though, because like as you said, you can say to someone, okay, so there's going to be a lobby and you wait about 10 minutes, but on the bright side, you'll be less mean to people. So are you on board with that or not?
Yeah, I mean, that's not the solution.
Right, right.
We have to make it streamlined. It needs to be fast, but we need to solve the social path problem, as we call it.
No one talks about that. That's a really keen observation, because when you hear about online bullying or stuff like that, you don't think about the rejection someone feels when they're playing on the team with just anonymous gamers, and it's if you don't meet that standard,
exactly,
instantly you're tossed out. Instead of if you knew the person, you would say, "Oh hey, massive dildo XX, what your username is." If you did this instead of that, you would not suck as much.
I had a very recent experience with this. So a friend of ours, friend of Andy and ours, Philip, he tried to get me back into Final Fantasy 14, and I haven't played in years. And so we were playing and we're just kind of getting used to the mechanics again. We did like the whole level skip and like all that stuff. We were like level 70, whatever. So we were doing one of the raids, and it was us, only us two. Andy no-showed that night. But we needed two more. So we queue up and we go and do the thing. And we go in, and like I'm technically a healer, but I don't understand all of the terms. So like they're spamming stuff in the chat, like yelling at me for doing stuff, and you know, not targeting the right thing or whatever. And I'm using a controller, and Philip was also using a controller, but he usually plays on PC with keyboard and mouse. So we're trying to tell them while we're in the middle of fighting, because there's no voice chat, trying to tell them in the middle of fighting, learning to play, you know, with controller, new to game, you know, all this stuff. So when it was all said and done, and we kept failing, and the four of us are just standing there, we're like, all right, well, we're leaving. I was finally able to type it all out, and I'm like, hey, I'm new to the game, I'm using controller, I'm not really used to the targeting system just yet, you know, I apologize. And they go, that's great and all, but don't do high level raids and waste our time when you're trying to learn the game. And they left. I was like, okay, cool, thanks guys, that was a lot of fun. they don't realize how frustrating that was for me.
Yes,
like that was frustrating for me, because I know that I'm bogging these two guys down, but at the same time, if the roles were reversed, just because of the player I am, I'd be like, it's all right, let's stick together, do a lower level one, I'll show you the ropes, I'll walk you through things. And then maybe, you know, we'll strike a friendship, and then we'll come back and we'll do this higher level. But all they cared about was grinding for the loot, getting it done so they could get their requirements done for the day.
And that's what the game taught them though.
Right. And I was in their way. That was it. I was just in their way of achieving their whatever their goal was for that.
It all sounds so mechanical and like devoid of any sort of human emotion, because when you say things like I was doing X, Y, and Z and they were yelling at you, it's because you're not following the preset approved form of how to play the game.
Right.
That annoys me. Like
that is exactly the problem they were trying to solve.
Like I'll play it my way, not the, you know, the preferred method of playing it. The right
whatever is fun, right? Whatever makes sense for you.
And also why would you discourage people from actually playing the game that you like?
Yeah. But I mean it's when you start like thinking like a designer, one of the first things that you learn to do is to not make it personal. Like you understand that those guys are not mean. They're not like bad people. It's just how the system that they're in encourages them to behave, right? That's something that you can bring to society as well. But that's a whole other level of conversation. But it's just trying to because in design, what we try to do, like what's the difference between design and engineering. When you're engineering something, you're building the thing, right? You're building the bridge. You're building the building. You're building the wall, right? That's what you do when you're engineering. When you're doing design, you're thinking about the human experience, and it's always indirect. So the architect, which is a design profession, is thinking about not like the engineer is building the building, right? The room, the walls. And the architect is worried about what's the view going to be? Like, how's it going to feel? Is this going to be feeling spacey? Is this going to be like a lit room? Is this going to be like darker? Is this going to be cozy? Is this going to be intimidating or luxurious, right? Like, these are all emotions. These are all feelings. So a designer is somebody who understands that we create behavior and emotion through systems, right? But we're not building the systems. We're building the emotions and the feelings. And ultimately, it sounds manipulative, of course. Like you think like, oh, you're just puppeteering people, but that's not true. You're creating systems for people to interact. And they do affect how people behave. Like you take League of Legends, for example, or any MOBA, not singling out LoL there in any way. But you just randomly put five people together to compete. Like everybody, if you lose your rank, right? Everybody's nervous about losing, and there's like lose streak, stuff like that. And everybody has to perform a very specific function. If you fucked up, the other team gets super strong. And it's just everything, the entire design of the game, it's made for people to be pissed off with one another, right?
This is why I stopped playing League of Legends, yeah, by the way.
Yeah, it's the design. Yeah, so Riot does a lot of cool stuff to try and make the community less toxic. But they are operating on the high level, right? But in the low level, in the rules, the systems, the basic behaviors and the encouragement that you get, the system is fighting against like civility, you know, it's fighting against treating people with respect and kindness, you know.
And, you have to overhaul a lot of that game to change that mindset.
Yes, yes, it is. It is like it is an amazing game. It is a really deep, incredible game. That is probably the most popular game of all time for a good reason. But I would say it's a toxic game. Like it's a design that, if you think about, has this done more good or more harm to the world? I would not be able to say, because there's so many great stories about playing MOBAs. There's always like so many terrible ones as well. And I mean, what we're trying to do with Legend is trying to be self-conscious about these decisions and trying to be like, okay, so what can we do to make a game that at its core, it incentivizes you to be nice. It incentivizes you to recognize other people as human beings and not just names on the screen. What can we do that will make people be incentivized to just play together, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what it's about. Like we've made so many reward systems and progression systems and ranks and competition and stuff like that, that we forget that we just want to hang out and have fun together playing games, right? That's what it's all about at the end of the day. And sometimes like these things just get lost in translation. And like I said, I'm not trying to change the world, and I don't think that we're going to be successful in everything that we're setting out to do for sure. There are way smarter people than me trying to crack this particular problem, like other designers. We hope to do our part. We hope to at least have one idea in there from the many ideas that we're trying to do that people are going to go, hey, this is pretty cool. And this is going to become something that gets incorporated into other games. So if that happens, I'm happy.
Yeah, as long as it's in the back of your mind when you're making a game, I think that's the key. Like, you're not trying to completely reinvent how we tackle like the issue of online gaming and toxicity, but just the littlest steps we can to make it a little bit better for most people, it goes a long way.
Yes. So there's two examples from the game that I really like. So I don't know if they're going to work or not, but they're something that I'm proud of right now. So the first one is called Help Others. So in Relic Hunter's Legends, we don't have traditional matchmaking in the sense that you go into a mission and you just screw up and we try to find people who are doing the same mission as you. We don't really do that. What we do is that we have a gigantic button on the map called Help Others. So when you click that, we do like a different kind of matchmaking. So in that matchmaking, we try to figure out like which people need you the most. So we try to calculate like people who have been playing by themselves a long time, their score is going to be higher. People who have like failed a mission or something like that, their score is going to be higher. Like people who are kind of doing something for the first time, their score is going to be higher. So we try to figure out who needs help the most and put you there. So when you click that button, you understand that you're not going to play what you want. You're going to be playing some where the system judges that you're going to be the most helpful. Like you're going to be there and you're going to be helpful for that person. So when you do that, you just join the game and you help the person out. And if you finish the activity, you get rewarded with a social currency called kindness. So, and if you stay on the party with that person and you play more stuff, whatever it is, just because you joined that party with the Help Others system, you're just going to keep earning kindness. So this is something that encourages people to go like the most optimal way of like farming kindness in the game is like you press Help Others. The game is going to put you somewhere with somebody who needs you. You're going to play with that person, help them out. You want to finish the activity together. If you leave or just swerve the person and the person leaves, you're not going to get your reward. But then you're encouraged to just stick around. So just going to ask the person, hey, so what you want to go do next? And the person, oh, I'm a bit confused. I don't know what to do. And they say, hey, yeah, I can show you the ropes, you know, and let's do this together. Like it's just an excuse. We're trying to find like an interesting excuse for people to actually interact, right? And the kindness, what's interesting about that is that it's a social currency. That's the only way you can earn it, just by helping other people and being like a helpful part of the community. And then once a week, NPC comes up, the stranger, she shows up, and you can buy stuff from her that is usually microtransactions. So that's one way that if you don't want to spend money in the game, you can just be a nice person in the community, and then you can get like cosmetics and stuff like that from the microtransaction shop.
Andy will be dropping $50 so he could just fuck with everybody.
Yeah.
You know me so well.
Here's $50. Fuck off.
So, yeah, in my attempt to kind of squash this whole kindness bullshit, I'm just going to be a massive troll in this entire system. How do I ruin this for everyone?
Yeah, that's the thing. We're trying to find a system that you can't really ruin it. I mean, you can join a Help Others match. Yeah, I mean, you can join a Help Others match and try to be a jerk, right? There really isn't a lot of ways that you can be a jerk in Relic Hunter's Legend overall. This is something that we try and incorporate into design as well. Like every time that we think about an idea, for example, early on in the design of the game, Pinchy, the tank, she could put up a wall, right? And that wall would block everything, including other players. And we found out that you could trap people inside like small corners of the map using the wall, right? So that was very funny, of course. But that's also something that people can use to bully other people, right? So this is something that we just changed the wall to a pass-through wall. It just made our lives easier, actually, in terms of the tech and the net coding that went into it, of course. But it's also just eliminated a possible way for people to bully somebody else. And I didn't think it made the game any less fun because of that. Same way, there's no friendly fire of any way. All loot is instantly shared, and you can't like ninja loot anybody. Like you can't push people off of stuff. Like the only thing you can do to like make the experience bad for somebody is just being AFK. That's the only thing. That's pretty much the only thing you can do. Which is,
hold on. I'm taking very diligent notes here.
And I mean, what's in it for you, right? The game just doesn't encourage you to do that in any way. And there's other small things that I really like. For example, there's one that is not in the game yet. It's just on our backlog to implement. I really like that. It's a super like. So it doesn't have an official name yet, so we just call it the super like. So when your match is done, you see a scoreboard and traditional stuff in games, right? So you can like get little awards for everybody, stuff like that. So at that point, you can like thumbs up people. You can do that. It doesn't do anything. It's just a nice thing. But you have once per 24 hours, you have a resource that you can use, which is the super like. So you can give that to somebody at any point, right? You can just say, hey, here, have a super like. And you give the super like to the person. There's a cool animation sound. And the person gets a super like from somebody else. Maybe because they played super well, because they're super nice, or because they were super lucky on their item drop, whatever it is. And that's just such a cool thing because, first of all, it's not worth anything. Like, it's not something that's going to be gamed. Like, you don't gain kindness or you don't gain resources or there's no achievement tied to this. There's no reason for you to game the system. And also, it's a scarce resource because you can only do this once every 24 hours. So when you receive it, you know it's for real, right? Like the person, he could have chosen anybody in 24 hours. He chose you. And the person who is given it also feels like I'm doing something special because this is like my recognition for the day for somebody who is cool, right? So everybody's feeling good. And even if you do it like, because we always think about the trolls, right? Even if you do it ironically, like if you spend the whole match saying, oh my God, you're so shit, you're shit. And then you get to the lobby and then you give a super like to the person. Like, it's just funny. I think it's going to break the ice, you know?
That's the move right there. That's the move.
It's just going to break the ice. And so that's why we're super proud of the system. Maybe when we test it out, we found out it's not so good. But right now, we really like it. And we're constantly trying to come up with stuff like that. Like,
can I pitch a name for it?
Yes.
The Relic Rose.
The Relic Rose?
Yes.
Sounds sexual.
It's like when you give a rose in The Bachelor. Like,
okay.
Here's your rose. You want to fuck the other player? Is that what you're trying to say?
I love you. You did a wonderful job. Here's your relic rose.
You turned me on with your gameplay so much. Steven.
Yeah.
Take a step back here. You know what we have here, right?
What do we have?
We have kindness. We have super likes. We have community. Sense of gathering. Doing nice things for people that you don't know. This is the second strand game.
Is what's happening right now. This is it. This is the second in the Strand universe. We got it.
There we go. It's still a game about shooting space ducks, though, and getting loot.
Well, the ducks had it coming. So,
yeah, they are fastest ducks, and they do deserve to get shot.
Bastards.
Do you worry about PETA knocking on your door any day now to like?
Oh no, it's okay because they're anthropomorphic animals, so we're good.
Goddamn aliens!
I don't know about that, Mark. I don't know.
All right, let's move on here. Let's see. I don't think we don't have any mailbag questions this week. That's all right. It's a quiet night.
Because we got questions.
Yes, we do. It is time to get into rapid fire questions. Mark, you need to strap yourself in. This is going to be a wild ride. Not as wild as Mr. Toad's wild ride, but wild nonetheless. Andy, would you want to start us off?
Oh, yes. This is the first question we always ask of our guests, and that is pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yes, for sure. Love me some pineapple.
All you want. The ratio is going in my favor.
No, it is not.
Almost an even split.
Nope. Not even close.
Yeah.
Not
it's
even
at least
close.
60-40. At least 60-40.
No way. No way. No way. I think it's 80-20.
I'll find that. No. It's not that low.
Yeah, it's 80-20 in favor of, for sure. For sure. Males getting mani-pedis, yes or no?
I didn't understand a single word. Can you say that again?
Okay. Gentlemen getting a manicure or pedicure.
Oh, okay, okay. Thank
yes you or no?
To make it simple for the Brazilian guy. Yes, yes. That's not only okay, but that's also awesome.
If you had the world's attention for only 30 seconds, what would you say?
I would say, get your head out of your asses and let's all come together and fight climate change.
It's a good one, right? It's a good one. I like that one. The whole world is listening. I tried and belched the alphabet.
Stop being little bitches and let's just focus on this.
I would just be like, stop being a bitch. Just end it right there. Universal. Like, yeah, just stop being a bitch. About what? Doesn't matter. Just stop being a bitch.
And if I could, it would slap. If I could slap everybody at the same time.
That would be so great. If you could simultaneously slap the entire population of Earth.
Yes.
That would be so wonderful.
That would be amazing.
So wonderful. Headphones, in-ear or over-ear?
Over-ear. Even though I'm using in-ear right now because my over-ear headphone is kind of busted and I hate it.
What is the stupidest thing you've done on your own free will?
Video games.
Good answer. Good answer. Okay. Analog sticks, offset or in line?
I don't understand what that means. What do you mean offset? I get it. I get it. Yeah, offset for sure.
You like the offset.
Said the game. All right, moving on. If you could close one fast food restaurant, which one would it be?
Taco Bell.
Ooh.
I like the Taco Bells.
I love me a good Taco Bell.
I hated that every time we have it here in Brazil. It's shit.
Well, to be fair, it's shit here too.
Right. I think that's the problem. Everybody I know from the US always talked nice about Taco Bell. And then it came to Brazil and was horrible shit. And then I would say, well, that's probably because it's here in Brazil. In the US, it must be good. And then when I went to the US, I went to Taco Bell and it was too shit.
What was raving about Taco Bell? Great Taco place. You gotta try it out. Taco Bell.
People like Taco Bell is so cool. Man. You don't have Taco Bell in Brazil. Taco Bell's the best. No, it isn't.
What is the worst movie you've ever seen in the movie theater?
Oh shit! Michael Bay Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
I was just thinking about that movie the other day.
That movie's so shit.
It really is. It's unfortunate. The second one was a little bit better, but still shit.
Yeah, but the first one is just a nuclear waste. Yeah.
Give us a non-inspirational quote.
An unspirational quote, as it were.
You're not going to make it. Give up. Do something else.
Just stop.
Anything else.
Yeah. Do something.
You're shit at this.
I feel like it's a personal attack on this podcast.
Also, not wrong. Favorite sport to play versus favorite sport to watch?
Favorite sport to play. I would say soccer, but now I'm old and fat and I can play only 3 minutes of soccer before I pass out. So probably, I don't know, table tennis. It's what I can manage these days.
No shame in that.
Favorite sport to watch. I think it's still soccer. Soccer is much better to watch than to play, honestly. It's a bullshit game. And I think that's why it's so good to watch, because it can be just better the entire game. And then somebody just tramples over the ball and it's go, and then you lose.
God.
At the very last second.
Where do you not mind waiting? You know, aside from like a game lobby for 20 minutes.
Well, I wouldn't mind waiting sitting in front of a Scarlet Monastery. But apart from that, where do I don't mind waiting? I actually hate waiting in any way, shape, or form.
It's the worst. I'm
a very anxious person, so waiting is like my arch nemesis. I think I don't mind waiting anywhere that I actually have like 4G on my phone that I can just be doing something else.
But what if you're in front of a Taco Bell? Would you wait there with your 4G?
No.
Who is your favorite Ninja Turtle?
That's very easy. It's Raph.
Me too. High five.
Good answer. Oh, here we go. Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Invisibility for sure. Yeah.
Good answer.
It's a rare answer.
Like if you're flying, yeah, man. Because if you're flying, first of all, it's fucking dangerous. Second of all, people are gonna know you're a superhero. So next time there's a black helicopter in your house, they're gonna probe your ass or something like that. If you're invisible, nobody sees you. That's the whole point.
See, you gave the right answer and you backed up the sound logic and thinking.
Not a lot of heroic things to be done when you're invisible. Just putting that out there. What else?
A lot of fun stuff, though.
Yes, exactly. A lot of fun stuff.
What is your favorite iteration of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
The very first comics, the dark ones.
The comics, super, okay. Yeah.
Yes, they're super cool.
Did you, sidebar, did you see the TMNT Batman animated movies or movie?
I haven't.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, yeah?
So good. Check that out there. So good. They did it. They, I think it might be the best iteration of the Turtles since the 1990 movie.
Oh,
just
shit.
Just like how well they characterize the Turtles and like that whole world. It's really, really well done.
Okay. That got me curious. I'm also really curious to check out the comics of Turtles and Power Rangers.
I've heard very good things about it. I also have not read those yet, but I've heard very good things. Yeah.
Those are probably my two favorite things from my childhood, like Super Sentai / Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles.
If you could lock up one person in the mental asylum, who would it be?
In which island?
In an insane asylum.
In a mental institution.
Oh.
In a crazy house. In a nut hatch.
Oh, Donald Trump. Sure. Yeah, that would be Donald Trump.
It wouldn't take much convincing.
You guys fucked up, USA. For everybody else.
No, as if it's the first time we fucked up on such a grand scale. Let's see. What is your favorite thing in your house right now? Just an inanimate object, not a person, not a pet, just your favorite thing.
Not a dildo as well. My favorite thing in my house that is not a pet and that is not a person. The cop-out answer would be my PC, right? But that's a cop-out answer. It's probably the little, I don't know how to say that in English, but it's a little thing that you use to like remove water from your sink, like a tiny little thing that, like a broom that you brush water with.
Squeegee.
A what?
A squeegee?
Squeegee. Yeah, that's my favorite thing.
That's a good answer. It's another really good answer.
So if someone gives you an elephant and you can't get rid of it,
okay,
what do you do with it?
I probably gonna love it very much. And it's gonna be my best friend.
Elephants are people too, Andy.
You're gonna replace the squeegee as the best thing in your house?
Well, it's not a thing.
Oh yes, I'm sorry.
There were rules to that question, Andy.
You're hurting the feelings of my elephant.
All right, Andy, I'm going to do one more question, and then you could take our final question.
Sure.
Our ceremonial final question. Okay. If you were the 5th/6th, depending on what universe you're talking about, Ninja Turtle, what would your name be? What would your weapon be? And what color would you be?
shit. That's a tough one. What my name would be? Maybe, I don't know, Picasso. And my color will be black.
Ooh.
And my weapon will be like a ninja squidgy.
I like it.
Dual wielding ninja squidgy.
Well, that or the dildo, one or the other.
Yeah, that's for another.
That's the backup weapon. Yeah,
that's for the porn parody.
That's for Adult Swim.
All right, Andy, take us home.
This is the last question. It's the most important question of the evening. So think about it, because your fate will be... It all rides on this question, all right?
Okay.
We've asked a lot of good ones.
Yes. Andy or Steve?
Well, Andy died after me in Relic Country Zero. That was caught on camera, so that was not nice. So I'll have to pick Stephen.
Good choice.
Wait, because I'm better at your game than you are.
Correct. Yes.
Don't question the logic, Andy. That's not what we do here.
It's all about questioning the logic.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to bring us to the end of the show. If you like what you are listening to, please give us a review on your favorite podcast service. Podcast Addict, if that's the app you use now, guys, I have news for you. They now have a review feature. You can review now directly through Podcast Addict. So if that's the app you're using, please consider doing that. And on Apple, iTunes, and all that fun stuff, please give us a review. And if you want to follow us on social media, we are at NDS Podcast. I am at BatChild27. Andy is at PantsGuy. And Mark, where could everybody find you?
They can find me at Twitter at Mark Venturelli. And they can follow Relic Hunters at on Twitter at Play Relic. Oh, sorry, at Relic Hunters U, as in Relic Hunters Universe. It didn't fit.
Well, you almost got there. Just needed a couple more.
Yeah, like a dozen
or so. if you want to join our Facebook group, we are facebook.com/groups/DS podcasts, or you can like our Facebook page at facebook.com/dualscreens.com. That's DOTCOM at the end there. Follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. Follow us on YouTube. Give us a subscription on YouTube, youtube.com/dualscreenstv. If you're listening to this on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button. It would mean the world to us, and hit that little thumbs up. Again, it would mean the absolute world to us. Our theme song, Retro Chatter, is by Bradley Parsons at Train Sound Studio. Andrew Douglas does our cartoon art. Matt Murray does our overlays and logos. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producer, Colton the Apprentice Nestler. Without your help, we cannot continue to grow. So we do appreciate it absolutely immensely, especially in these tough times. Every little bit will help us. And for as little as $1, you get access to our VIP Discord channel where you can hang out with us and our indie dev guests who join. And you could also vote on a topic for us to do for the monthly bonus episode, and you also get that bonus episode as well. If you want to buy some stuff, go to dualscreens.com/store. We have some items up there for you to buy. And that's it. That's going to do it for us. Andy, is there anything you want to tell the kids before we go?
Yeah, I think we should make Relic Hunters our next game for Monday night gaming session. That'd be a good thing to do.
Yeah, why not?
Play that game. And also, Mark, if you want folks to test out your new social being nice kindness thing, look no further. These two assholes right here.
Yeah. For sure. For sure.
We'll give it a real run for its money.
Oh yeah.
Thank you very much for listening, folks. Remember, keep it here on this channel, this very same channel, for the Dual Screens Gamescast on Monday and our seasonal content every other Friday. We love you very much. We're starting our new season. We just wrapped up Andy Explains It All. And we will be starting Dual Screens Versus very soon, and we'll explain what that is on Monday's Gamecast. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Mark. It was a pleasure having you on the show, Mark. Thank you so much for dropping
by. Thanks, guys. It was super fun. Thanks for inviting me.
Anytime. Anytime. And we do mean that. Thank you, listener. take care, and as always, please be excellent to each other.